national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books at Next Chapter Books. Make fantastic Christmas gifts. Also, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report is his weekly show down there, and the Iowa Politics Report comes to us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hi, Jeff.
Now, these are not photos of AM 950 personalities, you know, kind of like those firefighter beefcake calendars.
Oh,
that's
no,
not
it's
what
it's
we're talking about.
That was my first idea, you know.
Well, yes. Hello.
Matt cosplaying your favorite judicial, you know, judicial appointees of the season. I mean, that was I was, you know, all ready to go, oiled up, shaved, ready. They said no, so I had to go with the wildlife photos.
Well, there's no more wildlife than you oiled up and shaved, from what I'm told. But that's a whole different conversation for a different show.
But judicial nominee calendar, you cosplay judicial. Now, that would be – that's almost as good as cat yoga. So
Oh, who needs time off? Raise your hands.
Yeah, there you go. We're all there. Mitch McConnell, I think, needs some time off.
Oh, he just got the best Christmas gift ever. He got an electoral college saying he doesn't have to deal with Donald Trump anymore. And he's now turned around and threatened members of his own caucus that they dare not step out of line.
Well,
he's got it going on.
We should mention, okay, so why is this important? Just and I'll break down the and correct me if I'm wrong on any of this.
Sure.
The House can challenge any when they meet, I think it's what, January 6th. They can challenge any of the individual states' electoral college votes, but as you can have half the House involved, you have to have one senator to sign on to do this. And
that's right.
And if you have one senator and then a bunch of people from the House, then what happens is it's still not going to do anything because basically, you know, Republicans go to their caucus, Democrats go to their caucus, they talk about it for 2 hours, then come back and vote whether or not those ballots can be accepted. And with the Democratic House, they're going to vote to get accepted. It's over. So, but at the same time, what McConnell is doing is basically laying down the groundwork, particularly, I think, to Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. No, do not sign on with this. Let's just be done with this. We accept the Electoral College. It's over.
His biggest fear is that Ted Cruz will say something. Ron Johnson has his own more limited constituency. I'm not saying Cruz's is all that much broader, but he can articulate the message better. And so I think there's the Rand Pauls, the Ted Cruz's, the Ron Johnsons of the world. And, you know, Johnson is living high on the hog over histrionics today. And so he's getting a lot of positive media play. I remember seeing him at the Iowa State Fair, and I want to say it was in 2011 or 2010. No, it was 2010, because he had it in his mind then that he could run for president. I mean, that's what you do, right? You show up at the Iowa State Fair, eat food on a stick, and then declare your candidacy, and it went nowhere then. But I know he was thinking about it at that time, and it sure hasn't gotten any less, that interest. And so, will a Rand Paul do it? Will Ted Cruz do it to sell his dopey book about the Supreme Court? I don't know.
Well,
but McConnell's making it very clear. I don't care what Trump says on Twitter. He's yesterday's news. We're taking our party back. Bye-bye.
Johnson's not necessarily getting Johnson's hearing goes off the rails. It's not necessarily positive news that he's getting today. But I will say this. I think McConnell does realize there's a real good chance, especially with the napalm drops that Trump has done into Georgia, that those two Senate seats in Georgia could end up going to the Democrats. And I think Kamala Harris will have no problem being the tie-breaking vote as much as she possibly can.
Oh, I don't even think you're going to need the tie-breaking vote. I didn't mean to stammer there as if I'd fallen off my chair. The way this is shaping up, yeah, okay, fine. They sweep both the seats and she becomes the tie-breaking vote. But we are at a point where the Republican Party is fragmenting and we're watching it happen in real time. Now, I have already suggested to you, and I still believe it, that the Democrats are going to have a whale of a time. Biden is going to have a whale of a time holding this coalition together. Not saying it won't happen. I'm not predicting anything odd. I'm just saying they put together a coalition and everybody's elbowing for position. The biggest problem is the fragmentation, though, of the Republican Party, because you've got the Trump folks. You've got the old line Republicans who are saying, thank God we got our party back now that he's gone. Well, the Trump folks don't want to let it go. A lot of the voters say, wait a minute, we voted for Trump because you chuckleheads. I mean, keep in mind, Trump didn't just beat Hillary Clinton. He beat, what, 16, 24, 110, however many Republicans ran. All those mainline Republicans fell in the primary and caucus season because voters, supposedly regular Republicans, said, we don't like how you've been running things. Let's bring this guy in. So now these office holders say, oh, well, now that the Rodney Dangerfield Caddyshack character is out of Bushwood, it's ours again. Well, no, it isn't. And they're going to have a whale of a time. So what I'm saying is, yes, Kamala Harris would be happy to break a tie. But I don't think the Republican coalition is going to stay together enough on key issues for it to be necessary.
It's interesting you bring this up because on Saturday, I think it was on Saturday, there's two things that happened this weekend. Saturday on that one rally, these are right wing Trump supporters. They were chanting "Kill the GOP," which was really kind of, I think, a bit eye opening and maybe a part of the reason why Mitch McConnell all of a sudden seems to be very quickly changing his tune. And even a lot of Republican pundits on Sunday, it was like a save Christmas thing. And here's another person out saying, we can now say Merry Christmas. And Republican pundits were like, okay, enough with this. This has been made up. This is not a joke. And they themselves were – I didn't see any liberals going against it. The Republicans themselves were saying, okay, this is not helping our cause. And especially when it's so ludicrous and so contrived. And so you do see that. But, I mean – in Minnesota, we had the Independence Party. The Independence Party was supposedly moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans who had had it with the extremes of both parties, and they went and formed their own middle-of-the-road party. The reality was when there was a candidate that they really didn't like, they just migrated back to their other party, and that was the failure of that party. Eventually, the party's convention got taken over by far-right extremists, and the party died. And that was, I think, by design because the Republicans were getting their butts kicked because the Independence Party was taking enough votes away from them.
Right.
But the reality is that unless you have people who are truly committed, look back to when the Whigs broke up, you had people that were truly committed because the Whigs made slavery a must standard. There were a lot of Republicans back, or people that eventually became the Republican Party back then, who were saying, no, we're not going to ever be for slavery. So you had a very definitive line. Is Lisa Murkowski, is Susan Collins, is, you know, any of the other moderates that are in the Republican Party, are they ever really going to, when it comes down to it, side with the Democrats, or would they just return back home?
Oh, I think they'll side with the Democrats. I really do, because I think we're at a point now where it is almost a dirty word to say you're a Republican or a Democrat in certain parts of the country. And, you know, I've read the work of an analyst who before the 2016 election said the parties as we know them will no longer exist. And he particularly thought the Democrats would implode. And I thought at the time, okay, this is a little tinfoil hat stuff. But the reality of the situation is there's such fragmentation going on within each. And, you know, Susan Collins may have just gotten reelected, but so she doesn't have to run for reelection for 6 years. You really think she's going to sit there and say, well, I have an R by my name, so I'm just going to play nice? I mean, I really don't think so. I mean, there is such a groundswell of people in the muddy middle. They may lean left or lean right, but they don't identify fully with either major political party. I'm not leaving out other parties. I'm just saying those are the two that the system has perpetuated. And this is why we don't get a good third party in this country, because those in charge of setting the rules and the priorities and campaign finance and presidential campaign fund, those are all Republicans and Democrats. The only thing they can agree on is how to continue their own domination and monopolistic hold. I know monopoly is supposed to be one, but the two of them are working together on this, so it is one, on our political system. So, you know, I don't think, you know, do you really think Mitt Romney is, just because Trump's gone, he's now going to be a total Republican on things? I just don't see it.
Utah is in some very interesting ways, Utah is moving more to the left, which is very interesting on some ways.
Right. Absolutely right. I mean, you know, I've heard people joke and say, well, the way Romney's acting, he'll be lucky to get reelected from Utah. Yeah, but that has not a lot to do.
Not 1984 Utah, maybe, but not the modern one. They love them over there.
Or 1884 Utah, but again, these are all.
Well, here's the other thing, which is interesting, is when you look at how look at what happened to the Republican Party. When you're talking about, you're right. The way that we choke the two party system chokes out third parties here. Ron Paul saw this, went to the far extreme, realized that near pseudo-fascist side of the Republican – well, not even the Republicans. That far-right political on the diagram was underrepresented, really went in there and grabbed it. And let's face it. I mean, isn't this really what we're seeing is in an attempt to stop a third party from forming on the far right, the Republican Party shifted dramatically to the right, and now that bill is coming due?
To a degree, but here's an interesting thing. When you mentioned the Paul situation, this is what's this makes both of our points in a separate way. I'm saying that Trump took over the Republican Party because Republican voters put him there. Similarly, Ron Paul took over a lot of state organizations in his presidential run. I mean, he really did the grassroots, the groundswell kind of thing in certain states. He wound up getting his people elected to the state central committees, a lot of places. His influence, in other words, in pushing the Republican Party lasted far longer than his presidential candidacies. And again, in each situation, you've got voters who are saying this is what they want, and yet there's this group of Republicans who just insist that this over here is an aberration. Well, no, that over there is an aberration. And now we have our party back. Mm-hmm. There is no there. You know, they may be the office holders, but, you know, it's just not the party. Those people have failed the party, and the party is trying to leave them behind, mm-hmm. is what it comes down to. And when you said it quite accurately, you know, the people in Washington marching for Trump and wanting to get rid of the GOP, again, you can count on one hand, I think, the number of Republican office holders in Congress. So I'm saying state and, or House and Senate. One hand, the number who said they supported Trump in this post-election issue. The others couldn't run away from him faster if he were literally chasing them and fully on fire.
It was sad in Michigan when the Republican electors showed up and they're like, hey, we already checked in the electors, but not us. Oh, no, we have the electors. Like they their feelings were so hurt. How far is, I mean, it's clear at this point Mitch McConnell's done with this. I'm not going to be surprised if there's a lot of senior House Republicans who are also done with this. You got Mo Brooks out of Alabama says he's going to try to challenge it. If you know he needs a senator to challenge the Electoral College, but at the end of the day, is you know how much further is this, and how much real support is there going to be? Because let's face it, when that letter came on out backing the Texas lawsuit, which got thrown out by SCOTUS, there was an immediate blowback on a lot of those senators and House members who signed on to that deal, saying, "Wait a minute here, this is over. What are you doing, trying to just throw out a few states because you just don't like their vote totals?" And I'm wondering just. You know, are we really going to just, you know, drag or have a chicken contest with the train on this?
Monday was such a pivotal day for so many of these people. I mean, like, for example, you've got McConnell who was trying to keep it quiet, but making it very clear he wasn't unhappy about the results. A lot of these folks were waiting for the Electoral College so that they could have cover. Because what did we hear? We heard a lot of folks say, hey, look, Al Gore got 37 days or whatever. And, you know, the Electoral College doesn't meet until the 14th. And so they put so much stock on the, in essence, saying, look, Trump, if you're going to do something, it's got to be done by the 14th. Well, now the Trump people say, well, it's really not the 14th. It's really when they read them in Congress on the whatever, the 6th.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, we have until inauguration. Oh, shush. Just shut. Okay. So the point is, am I in any way surprised that Mitch McConnell – I'm a little surprised he went on the floor of the Senate, but it just shows how much he hates Donald Trump, truly, and hates working with him, because they looked for the first opportunity they could to say, it's done, it's over, congratulations, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out kind of thing. And so, you know, to your question about will you see some of these people? Well, of course they're going to. They're going to have to. Or they're going to say things. They're going to say things like Chuck Grassley did when he was asked, is Biden now – do you now – this was great the way that the reporter phrased it. Do you now recognize Biden as the president-elect? And Grassley's comment was, I don't have to. The Constitution already does. But just like, I don't want to say it, but we all know it. The game's done. And, you know, so they've got to keep a government open past Friday, which, well, oh, wait, they probably won't.
Well, and by the way, it should also be mentioned that McConnell's also looking at 2022 already. And that is a bad looking playing board for them. I understand usually incumbents lose, but they've got a lot of vulnerable Senate seats. And so if he doesn't have power for these first 2 years, it might be hard for him to come back and get that in 2022. Not saying that the House might not go back to the Republicans, but I mean, I think he's looking, he's like, right now I am 4 years at best if things go wrong from being in power. And this is, that's a dude that likes power.
Well, how about this one? Let's say that he is no longer the outright majority leader. Let's say it's 50-50. Does he even get to still be the leader of his own party in the chamber? You know, at what point is there some sort of a challenge?
There's enough. You're right. There's enough Republicans on that loony bin far right that would, you know, put God, Ted Cruz. Holy God.
Oh, well, and this is the point. Look at us come full circle as if we'd planned the conversation. You were asking me if the Republican coalition could hold together for a vote. And I said, no, the vice president won't be necessary to break the tie. So certainly you could see one of them saying, you know, let's move along here. And not necessarily because McConnell, you know, failed in the election. Usually that's when you get a change, right?
Yeah.
You lose the majority and it's your fault. Well, the playing field was horrible for Republicans. And the fact that they are this close to maintaining a majority in the chamber is more miraculous because, you know, when we were talking ahead of time, did we really think that it would be a Republican majority? So, you know, thanks for getting reelected, Mitch. Maybe it's time for you to take it a little easier.
We'll take a break. Come on back. It is Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205, the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, is the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us. Jeff, there seems to be a growing idea that what Trump is going to do on the way out the door is start a whole bunch of, you know, special prosecutors to basically just investigate Biden. You know, I got to imagine that is, you know, Republicans are probably laughing at the idea of this, but how much power does a president have? Could they put their own attorney general in there and end that?
Well, here's the thing. You've got an interim attorney general. Well, all right. Let's assume behind the scenes Barr was asked to do this and he refused. And that's why he gave his resignation, other than the fact that he couldn't get out of the clown car quick enough.
Yes.
So now you have an interim. Will he be willing to do Trump's bidding? If not, you remove him and appoint another interim. Because as you recall, he did that when Sessions left. He didn't go with the internal department plans. He appointed his own acting attorney general, who, of course, can then do any of this stuff. Now, the reality of the situation is what they're trying to do is say, fine, have somebody in the AG's office appoint a special prosecutor or special counsel, and it will, just as with Durham, it will extend beyond the life of the administration, and then it's going to make Biden look bad if he fires a special prosecutor who was looking into his son. Well, here's the thing. The Durham investigation is different. It's been going on for a couple of years. Whether it should have been extended, that's a whole different issue. But if in December or January they appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the incoming president's son, I don't think you're going to get a lot of Americans who will say it's okay to pull the plug on that investigation.
I think that will be, you know, that's just bitter, you know, angriness at the end there by Trump as he heads out the door. By the way, I should mention, you and I will not talk the next two Wednesdays. 2 weeks or a week from, 2 weeks from tomorrow, 2 weeks from tomorrow on New Year's Eve. You are kind enough to join us for a full New Year's Eve show.
It is right before happy hour on New Year's Eve. What can go wrong?
We have a long way to go before then. This year sucks so bad, man. Knock on wood. All right. We will be there. Jeff and I will talk live, full hour with Jeff coming up on the New Year's Eve show. Jeff, thank you very much. Go find his books over at Next Chapter Books. We will be back with a show on Thursday. Until then, see ya.